You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and today we're analyzing the results from the second round of the Teaching Excellence Framework, lovingly known as the TEF. For anyone out there who doesn't know what the heck we're talking about, the TEF is an assessment of university teaching that was introduced by the UK government a couple of years ago. It's meant to be a resource for students to judge teaching quality of undergraduate courses, as well as promoting teaching excellence more generally across the higher education sector. Universities are awarded a classification of gold, silver, or bronze based on a written submission and their performance in six core metrics that include teaching, academic support, and progression to employment. I spoke earlier to Chris Husbands, chair of the TEF and vice chancellor of Sheffield Hallam University, about this year's assessment. And joining me now is our news editor, Chris Havergal, data editor, Simon Baker, and reporter, Anna McKee. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Anna, I'll start with you because you've written our news story. What were some of the key results from this year's exercise that stood out for you?
I guess the key results from this year are that a couple of those Russell groups who got surprisingly low grades last time managed to improve their scores. So we've got Liverpool and Southampton who moved from bronze to silver, and Durham and York who moved from silver to gold. But then at the same time, you've got another Russell group, Warwick, which stayed at silver, and another, not Russell group, but leading university, SOAS, which stayed at bronze. So I think those are the key universities that people would kind of surprised about their results last year, and some will be happy this year, and I guess Warwick and SOAS less so this year.
And surprised because last year was the first year that they were doing this, and because they're leading universities, they maybe didn't get the classification that people had expected them to get.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain expectation with Russell Group universities that they will score the best in things like the REF, and I guess they would have hoped to score well once again with the TEF. And getting bronze, I think, for Russell Group universities was quite a surprise. The VC of the University of Southampton kind of criticised the TEF afterwards because you're a world-leading university and international students are going to be looking at these things. You don't want them to think you're not as world-leading as perhaps you've said that you are.
Another surprising bit of this year's results is the London School of Economics, which again chose not to participate in this year's exercise and still sits at a default bronze award. What's happening with the LSE? Anyone?
Well, I mean, I think there's always a risk when you re-enter an exercise like this. I mean, to be fair, LSE couldn't do worse, but there'd be an embarrassment if they hadn't have got an improvement. One can only hypothesise. We'll have to wait to see what LSE say. But you would suspect that some of the issues that LSE faces, particularly around student satisfaction, which is an issue for all London universities in the National Student Survey, you would expect that they probably thought that in the space of the year not enough had changed for them to be able to improve, be confident that they'd be able to improve their rating. And you could argue that the reputational risk of getting bronze a second time round would be reason enough for them not to go in this time around.
As has happened with SOAS. And it's worth pointing out that there's several London institutions that haven't reapplied who got bronze last time.
London Met was one of them.
London Met. Because the London institutions, there was a bit of a London effect in that they score quite poorly in the NSS.
Mm-hmm, the National Student Survey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what was different from this year's assessment compared to what happened last year?
Sure. I mean, the core metrics that the TEF is looking at are still the same. They're looking at retention. They're looking at student satisfaction using the NSS data. And they're looking at graduate employment data, largely based around the destinations of the Leavers of Higher Education survey. What they have changed, though, is the weighting of the NSS in the results has been reduced. It's been halved. Several reasons for that. A lot of people long before the TEF, and certainly even more so after the TEF, have argued that student satisfaction is a pretty poor guide to teaching quality. There's a strong argument that really good teaching troubles and challenges you and doesn't necessarily leave you satisfied. The London effect that we've already talked about, clearly there's an issue there that is beyond universities' control in many ways, linked to the cost of living in London. So universities were perhaps being argued that they were unfairly being penalised there. And there was also a pretty successful boycott of the NSS by a number of students' unions last year, which, you know, created problems around the data. So again, it's a response to that. In addition to changing the weighting, there's a number of supplementary metrics which have been introduced this year, which won't necessarily sort of change the initial judgment about a provider's performance, but once those core metrics have been looked at, could lead to changes to the rating that they ultimately get. These cover sort of graduate level employment and also graduate earnings. And there's an argument there, in certainly a lot of people's views, that those could be changes which could help some Russell Group universities, perhaps explaining some way some of the changes that we've seen this year. There's also a supplementary metric on grade inflation, asking universities for sort of how their grade profile of sort of first and two ones has changed over time. So that's another new element this year. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The final change is, again, something which feeds into this debate around the performance of the Russell Group in the TEF, is allowing assessment panels to look at absolute scores on those metrics, as opposed to just benchmark scores. So the scores that we're talking about that form these gold, silver, bronze ratings are typically benchmarked by universities' performance on a range of sort of measures, on sort of basically equality issues, a bit around gender, be it around social economic performance, be it around ethnicity. The complaint of Russell Group institutions was that actually, if you looked at their absolute scores, they may have been on sort of 96-98% or something. So in terms of performing against a benchmark, it's pretty hard to show an improvement in your performance. So again, there's been a change there, which has, you know, some people would argue been beneficial to some of the elite.
Do you think it has made any difference, the existence of the Office for Students this year, that didn't exist last year?
I mean, these changes were sort of in train, sort of alongside the formation of the Office for Students. I mean, I guess what you might see, you know, the OFS is clearly very much a student-focused regulator, and I'm sure we'll be, you know, looking to make ever more use of these, these findings and putting pressure on universities which, you know, are perceived not to be performing at the expected standard.
Simon, I'm interested to hear your thoughts about, obviously, the metrics are being, new metrics are being tacked on. How they're being measured and looked at is different this year compared to last year. Is it fair to say that you can make year-on-year assessments? I mean, is this really going to, is it making it obsolete if they just have
keep changing
part of it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, yes, probably, and no. I think you're going to be able to look at the data this year for these institutions that have reapplied, and to a certain extent compare them with last year's data for the same metrics that we used last year, and see some improvement. But when you're thinking about the overall sort of judgment, then there kind of a lot more factors have come into play this year. So there's the supplementary metrics that Chris has already talked about. There's the absolute scoring. Then they were already looking at things called split metrics, which is where they look at the performance on, say, just one certain set of students. So they look at performance of students from disadvantaged backgrounds, for instance. So what they actually do with the data is they'll make an initial judgment on the sort of main metrics they're looking at. And then they'll look at all these other things and see if that changes their mind, really, as to whether someone's got a gold, silver and bronze. And because they're tacking on more and more of these metrics, it's starting to get really quite messy and complicated in terms of trying to explain, you know, for any student that looks at this, okay, they'll look at the overall award and they'll go, oh, that's why they have these gold, silver, bronze awards, because a student's just going to look at that, right, and say, okay, they've got a bronze, they've got a gold, that's what they're going to take away from it. But if you start to kind of try and understand why and how an institution reached that level, it starts to become quite convoluted, and, you know, there's a sort of risk that the sector generally will lose kind of trust in the whole process, because every year there's this kind of change to what's going on. So and there's a real risk that it will become more and more meaningless in that, you know, you've got this overall badge, but, you know, how people have got there, you can't really compare one year with the next. It's quite difficult. You know, if, unless there's a sort of stabilisation of the methodology. And I suppose, I mean, the argument that that they'll give from the kind of OFS side is that, you know, this is still a kind of experimental phase in a lot of ways. Originally, the TEF was supposed to can then influence sort of tuition fees, and that's not happening. Yeah, all these kind of things might get decided, but we will come to a point where we're going to have to say, right, this is the TEF, this is the way we do it, and we're going to keep it that way, so you can like kind of see real kind of changes year on year. And that's even before you even get to the subject level TEF, which is another separate kind of process which is being piloted at the moment, where we're looking at sort of TEF and individual subjects. I sort of think that kind of with a lot of these data and metrics based kind of assessments that go on in higher education and elsewhere, there's a real danger of overload, actually, where you're going to get to the point where people just are kind of given so much information that it becomes not very useful at all.
Mm. I mean, just picking up on something Simon says, I mean, Simon was talking about the perceptions in the sector that universities might have about the TEF and its value. I think it'll also be quite interesting to see how students respond to the increasing complexity of the TEF. At the end of the day, the TEF's still going to give a pretty straight gold, silver, bronze response. And so what will be interesting to see is whether students are sort of content to just go, okay, that's gold, I'll apply to that, or that's silver, I'll apply to that, or whether they'll say, well, actually, what does gold, silver, bronze mean? And, you know, if they look at it, they'll soon find it's pretty complicated to find out the answers behind that. I'm not sure if we've got a clear sort of answer on how that's going to go, but it's going to be very interesting to see over the next year or two.
Yeah, and it would definitely be within their range of responsibility to explain to students that maybe a gold this year means something completely different to what a gold will mean in 5 years, if they can completely change the methodology.
Yeah, and I guess what would be really interesting is to find out how students use these ratings now, how they're sort of viewing them. We really could do with some kind of research on that to find out, do they actually... Because I suspect a student looking at where to study does not look at the LSE and go, oh, okay, LSE is bronze, I'm going to study at the LSE. Yeah. You only have to look at the kind of jobs that, you know, getting a degree from the LSE leads you to realise that it's still a pretty good bet if you can get into LSE to get an education there.
Well, yeah, maybe it's just that. I mean, maybe those kind of higher ranked institutions don't necessarily need the TEF. Maybe it's more of like the mid-range institutions.
I think the LSE is a bit of an anomaly here, because people will still look at the LSE and think it's great. What you might do is look at Warwick silver. Maybe I'll apply to York or Durham instead, because they're gold. It's those sort of, when you're sort of moving between what people, you know, students and applicants might think of broadly institutions of similar quality, that's where you might make that decision. That's where you might say, instead of Hull, you know, maybe I'll apply to Aberystwyth instead.
And also for students maybe who come from those disadvantaged backgrounds or are part-time students and maybe don't have someone in their lives that's helping them make that decision, maybe they will be a bit more reliant on these types of metrics, which speaks to even greater responsibility that the government has to make sure that these are accurate reflections of the teaching that students can expect to get.
Yeah, I'm sure that's very true.
So, Simon, you mentioned the subject level TEF, and Anna, you've covered this a little bit for THE already. What's the latest for the plans for these discipline level TEF that is in the works?
Yeah, well, the consultation has closed now, which has been very interesting for us to have a look at how people like the Russell Group and other mission groups have responded. So the consultation is finished, and I guess the government is taking that on board. But you've still got the pilots. The pilots are still ongoing, and there will be another year of the pilots afterwards. So we're not quite at any point of implementation yet, although it seems that Sam Gyimah is very keen on subject-level TEF. There's a lot of criticism for certainly what has been proposed, and I think flawed is the word that lots of different Russell groups and academics have kind of levelled at the subject level TEF. Interestingly, Universities UK, it did a survey of its institutions that took part in the pilot, and there was very little, not very many of them were keen, thought it was useful. So yeah, it's certainly something that the government's going to have to really look at, because as Simon was saying, it's just another complication, it's another level that students have to understand, and that was some of the criticisms in the consultation was, will student understand the way that the disciplines are broken down? Are these the right ways to break down the disciplines? Especially the interdisciplinarity, which everyone is pushing for in research and saying it's a great thing and we need to be working across disciplines. But nobody, I think, had anything good to say about the way interdisciplinarity was going to be measured in the subject level TEF, because it's so difficult. And yeah, one of the things that definitely came out was like students will not understand how to compare two disciplines, but also how they work in interdisciplinary ways. So that's certainly something that they'll have to go back and look at, because there wasn't anyone who thought that was a good way of doing things.
And this one would also take into account the grade inflation metric as well, right? That there is some serious concern around that.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern in the sector. I don't. There was another one where looking at the various responses from mission groups, from Russell Group to Mission Plus, Million Plus. No one really felt there was a good way to measure grade inflation, and adding it to disciplines is just another level of complexity and confusing students who are trying to understand not only what university to go to, but now what subject they should do at that university. Mm. So yeah, roundly more criticism for the grade inflation metric.
Right.
It's not very popular.
Which also brings into question, I mean, at one point the TEF was going to be linked to the amount that universities were able to charge for tuition fees, but that's obviously now changed. Theresa May has made a decision that tuition fees are going to stay at £9,250. So is this just something that's going to fall to the wayside? I mean, how is the sector going to take this seriously?
Well, I suppose a wider context of this is the big funding review anyway, although because, yes, it was kind of suggested that the TEF could sort of influence fees in a way that could then kind of create some variability in the fees regime. But since then, I think the debate just moved on to kind of, there was a crisis point, I think, around about last year where there was real kind of questions being raised about interest rates and loans anyway. So the whole thing's being looked at again, isn't it? So, you know, where the TEF is going to slot into that, who knows? We need to sort of find out what the government, you know, what the result, the review is generally for tuition fees, because that could be anything.
Yeah, what they've done is made TEF a condition of registration to the OFS, but that's nothing that, you know, the government can change that if it wants. It's not if what happens with tuition fees changes, it's not set in, it is not set in stone technically.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly, you know, it does lessen the sort of the importance of the TEF away in a way, inevitably. You know, it always matters more when there's money on it. That said, I don't get the sense that the TEF is just going to disappear as a result of that. You know, clearly student, you know, you have to look at the number of column inches, you know, being devoted to the TEF, you know, in the mainstream press, to, you know, to see that this is something clearly people have paid attention to. And you know, certainly it has clearly, you know, started conversations about teaching quality, and it has led institutions to focus more on teaching, you know, potentially where, you know, sometimes they haven't given it quite as much as focus as they should have done in the past. So I don't think it's going anywhere, but where exactly it's going from here remains to be seen.
Well, one person who might know a little bit about where it's going would be Chris Husbands, who's the chair of TEF. I spoke to him earlier to hear his reaction to this year's results and to hear about the future of the assessment.
So we're publishing the results of the 2018 TEF assessment this morning, and that's an assessment based on about 80 institutions, some of them returning to TEF assessments, some of them fresh in assessment. I think that we have matured the process of TEF assessment, and the results we're publishing today add to a picture of diverse excellence across the wide range of UK higher education.
And in terms of the results, I mean, were you pleased with it? Was it about what you expected in terms of the awards that were given?
Well, what the TEF panel has done again is to make an assessment at institution level based on the same criteria as we used last year, the same principles of data with core metrics, split metrics, both benchmarked, and institutional submissions. What the panel did not do was to make explicit institution by institution comparison with last year. So what we've done, once again, is to give a point in time assessment, and we've been able to demonstrate that excellence takes many forms. It's very diverse across the sector. You find it in large multi-faculty universities. You find it in small specialist institutions. You find it in what we used to call alternative providers and what we still call further education colleges.
You said that it's a metrics-led exercise, not a metric-determined exercise, but the methodology of measuring, of looking at those metrics has definitely changed this year compared to last. So will it be possible for people, especially students, to do year-on-year comparisons of the assessment?
Yeah, that's a good and important question. There are some significant changes to the application of the methodology. That's to do with the lower weighting of the National Student Survey at the first initial hypothesis. It's to do with, we have some additional metrics on deprivation. We're bringing in the indices of multiple deprivation that we didn't have last year. However, we are assessing on the same grade descriptors against the same criteria. And one of the things the panel has done is to do some pretty simple and straightforward checks to ensure that there is broad comparability between TEF 2017 and TEF 2018. So I hope that what we've got is a set of robust judgments that reflect the sector over the 2 years that we've been assessing.
I mean, that is one of the, I guess, criticisms that you must be expecting, is people saying that the methodology has shifted. So how robust really is this exercise? And I'm just wondering, I assume that the methodology is going to shift again for future assessments. So is that in the cards, and how are you going to kind of make up or mitigate any risk of that making it impossible to do year-on-year assessment of the results?
So I understand that some people will want to focus on changes in the methodology, and I would emphasize again that we have used the same assessment criteria, we've used the same grade descriptors, and we used the same underpinning metrics data. So although there are some methodological changes, the exercise is broadly comparable, and this is not unusual. If you look across the experience in higher education at the evolution of the RAE into the REF, if you look at the assessment of hospitals, if you look at the assessment of schools by Ofsted, methodologies evolve over time, and that inevitably things change and develop. And I have always been clear that I expect TEF to change and to develop. However, by routing this, same criteria, same assessment judgments, same assessment criteria, I think these are a broadly comparable set of results.
Another criticism from last year's assessment is its ability to measure how universities are really getting to and serving students from disadvantaged backgrounds. Did you achieve that this year? And if not, how do you plan to do that?
So, I've heard the criticism. I'm aware of the criticism. What the TEF gives us built in the metrics is the opportunity to look at the split metric performance across different demographic groups. We were able this year to bring in and to make use of the indices of multiple deprivation, and that the entire process of benchmarking gives us the opportunity to try to focus on the institutional effect when you begin to filter out some of the cohort differences between institutions. That's not perfect. Of course, it's not perfect. Social statistics are never perfect, but you apply to the metrics professional judgment and you look at the institutional submission. So I think that although, again, I won't say this is perfect, but I think that we've taken the sector quite a long way down the road of understanding benchmarking, of looking at splits, and we are able to focus on outcomes for disadvantaged groups of students.
The former universities minister said that the university's award in TEF would be directly linked to the tuition fees that they're able to charge. But now that tuition fees are frozen, are you concerned that the impact of TEF or the influence of TEF among institutions and indeed among students is going to somehow be watered down now?
So one of the things I've been doing over the last 18 months is talking to a very large number of senior teams in universities. And whilst there was the decision in September 2017 to de-link TEF from fees, I still find across senior leadership teams, across heads of departments, across academic staff in universities, that the TEF is taken incredibly seriously. It is shining a sharp strategic light on teaching and teaching performance. And it's a part, it's not the only thing, but it's a part of a much stronger trend towards valorizing teaching across the sector.
The TEF is existing in a university system that is quite different. I mean, we've got a new minister, we've got the Office of Students now, there's a higher education funding review on its way. How do you see this sitting in the current landscape and eventually evolving to remain sustainable and relevant?
Yeah, that's clearly a very good question. There have been a series of attempts over the last 25 years to valorize teaching more highly in higher education policy. We've seen that through subject review, through Centers for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, through the work of the Higher Education Academy. So I do see TEF as part of a long-term trend to value teaching in what is a very diverse sector. I think the challenge for me, the challenge for the panel, the challenge for policymakers is to make sure that as the sector develops, actually TEF also develops with it and is sensitive to what are going to be some very rapid changes across the structure and organisation of the sector. We've now run TEF twice. We've run TEF in 2017 and 2018. We are piloting subject TEF. That work has been ongoing alongside the institution TEF. We're looking forward to engaging with the fundamental review of the TEF, which was promised in the Higher Education and Research Act. So there's a lot of developments going on, but I'm pretty confident that we've got a robust basis for engaging with a rapidly changing sector.
That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me, everyone.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can see our full analysis of the test results along with some sector commentary on our website, timeshighereducation.com. And if you've got any suggestions for the podcast, you can get in touch with me, sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.